This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex, a natural solution to chronic pain. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposomes and nanotechnology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. Sourced and manufactured in the United States, this product contains 1,600 milligrams of curcumin and powerful antioxidant properties. This plant-based curcumin is used to possibly reduce inflammation, block proteins that trigger swelling, and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Don't live with pain when there's an all-natural, science-based remedy that works without adverse side effects. Get free shipping on all of your orders at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about eye health. We've invited one of our favorite guests, our go-to expert on eye health, Dr. Rudrani Banik. Dr. Banik is a board-certified ophthalmologist. She also has training, I believe, in neuro-ophthalmology. Some of that training obtained at Johns Hopkins University and other prestigious places. And what I really admire about Dr. Banik is that she is scrupulously trained academically. She is a mainstream practitioner of ophthalmology. She operates on patients, but at the same time, she's very open-minded to integrative approaches. And so she is really a great person to talk to about both high-tech interventions and natural approaches to eye health. So without further ado, here's Dr. Banik. Dr. Banik, it's a pleasure having you back on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hoffman. It is a pleasure to be back. I really enjoyed our conversation last time as well.
Indeed. Well, you know, a lot of water under the bridge since then. You know, we didn't know from COVID-19 the last time I spoke to you. And you, like me, you're a physician in practice. How has COVID-19 impacted your practice? Did you close the office, or did you just see emergencies, or have you been doing a lot of telemedicine? How does an eye doctor accomplish all the things that an eye doctor needs to do remotely?
Yeah, so when the pandemic first hit, we as ophthalmologists were given a mandate basically to stop practicing and or seeing patients face to face because we were at high risk being closed when mm-hmm. when we examine our patients. So it was recommended that we all close our practices, we cease any kind of surgery, any kind of procedures. So for about 3 months or so, my office was closed. And also because I'm based in New York City where the numbers were very high, I mean, we took extra precautions. So I've been slowly opening up and just kind of adjusting patient flow and only one person in the office at a time and being extremely sanitary with all of our equipment. And I, on the other hand, I have been doing quite a bit of telemedicine as well. So I've been managing to still provide care, but more virtually. And surgeries, we just got the go ahead to start operating again as of last week, and we'll see how that pans out. But it will be a very slow start and a long time before we can fully get back to normal.
What's the range of surgeries that you perform? Are you just sort of a general surgeon in eye care? Do you deal with everything from trauma to glaucoma to cataracts, or is there any particular thing you focus on?
Yeah, so I am trained as an ophthalmologist, which means that I have training in all of those different types of surgery. But in terms of my focus currently, I really, really focus on cataracts and certain types of laser, as well as ocular surface issues. So I don't do glaucoma surgery. I don't do retina surgery. But then I also do some in-office procedures, including therapeutic Botox. So I have quite a few patients who have facial spasms and other types of issues.
So the Botox not for not merely for cosmetic purposes, but people have a blepharospasm and, you know, the things where the Botox relaxes the eye muscles or maybe, you know, I don't know what the precise term is, but they're cross-eyed. You know, they need to have their eyes straightened out with Botox.
Exactly, yeah. So the therapeutic indications for Botox, and it's very interesting you brought that up because crossed eyes, or strabismus in medical terms, was the first FDA-approved indication for Botox. And so we used it
before
for
wrinkles.
Red eyes, well before wrinkles, yes. Mm-hmm. And so as a side effect of using it for ocular conditions, people realized, oh, it actually decreases the appearance of these fine lines and creases. So that's how the, you know, the birth of cosmetic Botox came about. But ophthalmic indications were some of the first medical FDA-approved indications. And as you mentioned, blepharospasm is one of the, you know, very common conditions that does very well with Botox. Also, hemifacial spasm or just eyelid twitches. Mm-hmm. And then I also use it for migraine.
Yes. I have a bit of a minor in migraines. You know, you do, but you see a fair number of patients with migraines, particularly when there's eye involvement, ocular migraines.
Yes, yes. So many people have visual symptoms with migraine, and so they end up going to the eye doctor first. So as a neuro-ophthalmologist, I do manage quite a few migraine with patients. I would say about actually 50% of my practice has some form of headache or migraine. And so I use natural therapies along with some of the traditional medical therapies for migraine.
Yeah, well, what can an eye doctor bring to the situation with migraines? Because traditionally that's the bailiwick of neurologists, and they use various, you know, so there's some new medications, there's some old medications. Mostly it's about medication, right?
Yes, yeah. So many patients come in with visual symptoms, so they may see flashing lights, for example, and oftentimes it's quite a frightening experience. Many people think they're having a stroke when they start seeing these flashing
zigzag
lights, which we call aura. And so for that, you know, for a first timer who's developed migraine with aura, an ophthalmologist is key because we do something called the visual field test, and it tests the patient's peripheral vision. And we just want to make sure that there's nothing neurologic going on. For example, you know, if there is some finding on the visual field test, we would definitely order further testing such as an MRI or CAT scan, for example. So oftentimes ophthalmologists are the first providers to see patients with migraine. Patients also may have light sensitivity with migraine, so we help to manage that. And some people have some other strange visual phenomenon as well. For example, transient loss of vision or even double vision from migraine. So some of the more rare manifestations of migraine is falls into the purview of ophthalmology, but more particularly neuro-ophthalmology.
You seem to take a special interest in color blindness. And, you know, and I didn't realize this, but after talking to you, I recognize that there are various shades and gradations of color blindness. It's like not an all or nothing thing. Are there any plausible ways of overcoming that?
Yeah, so there are two distinctions when it comes to color blindness. There's congenital color blindness, and then there's acquired color blindness. So congenital is actually very common in the population, particularly in males. Mm-hmm. Interesting fact, so about 12% of males in the U.S. have some degree of red-green color blindness. So mm-hmm. it's not that they can't see those colors completely, but there's some gradations that they are unable to mm-hmm. see. They may confuse certain shades. And it is also seen in women, but much less common. I think there have been about 1 in 200 women have color blindness or red-green color deficiency. But the other type of color blindness, which is acquired color deficiency, is it could be either red-green or blue-yellow. And these all have to do with the cones in the retina in the back of our eyes, which cones are affected and in what percentage. And so many people who have retinal issues will have color deficiency or optic nerve issues, for example. I deal with a lot of patients with optic nerve stroke or optic neuritis, which can be seen with multiple sclerosis. Many of these patients have some degree of color deficiency as well. So there's a whole range of different causes of color issues, but the most common is color blindness.
Could a cataract make it so that you discern colors less clearly and you sort of a graying out effect in terms of color vision?
Yes, actually, that's probably one of the most common causes of acquired color issues. So what a cataract is we all have a natural lens inside the eye, which is transparent. But as we get older, it does begin to opacify a little bit. The proteins develop in the lens that cause it to become yellow or sometimes even orange or brown in color. And that degrades the amount of light getting through to the retina in the back of the eye. So it affects color vision as well. And what people don't realize is that cataracts usually develop very slowly, so they may not recognize that they're losing color vision or having an issue with color vision. Things look a little bit muted, a little subdued, mm-hmm. but once someone has cataract surgery, it's like a whole new technicolor world.
It's like getting a new HD TV, right?
Exactly. So it's a pretty striking comparison, but again, mm-hmm. many people don't realize how much their cataract may affect their color vision because it's a slow process. It happens over years to decades, and it's very subtle. But yes, absolutely, it can affect color vision.
So the big elephant in the room these days is COVID-19. And there's a lot of controversy about masks. And then there's this variation on the theme, wear a mask and wear an eye shield. So have you been following some of the studies, looking at the evidence for transmission via the eyes? You know, I always thought that people were sort of missing the boat. You know, they dutifully wear masks, but, we know that the eyes are mucous membranes, and they can be a way that viruses can enter the system. There's easy communication between the eyes and the nasal passages. What's the deal?
Yeah, Dr. Hoffman, I'm so glad you brought this up because there is a lot of controversy out there, and rightfully so, because as things are evolving, we are learning more and more about this virus. So things that we thought were true a few months ago, now we know are not as concerning, for example. So initially there was a lot of, concern because yes, the eyes have mucous membranes. And for example, if you touch something that's contaminated with the virus and then touch your eyes, you may potentially introduce the virus that way. Or for example, if someone coughs or sneezes and the virus is in the air, it's suspended in the air, it can potentially enter the eyes that way. But the truth is, I think, there have been a couple of small studies published on this, but the largest study showed that transmission via the eyes is actually low. It's quite, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's rare, but it's mm-hmm. on the low side, less than 5%.
Okay.
And in terms of your question about wearing eye protection, so most people, if they're out and about, yes, they should be wearing their mask, absolutely. But in terms of eye, goggles or glasses, it's quite rare that it would be transmitted that way. So I would say for the general population, it is not necessary. Mm-hmm. But if you are exposed to a high viral load, for example, if you were a healthcare worker or, if you're in a household with other family members who mm-hmm. have COVID, then yes, you may be exposed to higher virus levels mm-hmm. and it may be best to wear goggles. And so what I do is typically when I'm out on the streets, I don't wear eye protection. I mm-hmm. do wear sunglasses to protect against UV damage, but not specifically for COVID. Right. But when I'm in the hospital and I'm working with patients in the clinic and we don't know, we have to assume that everyone may potentially have the virus, mm-hmm. we do wear eye protection, especially for procedures. If we're mm-hmm. doing any, even something like Botox we were talking about before, we absolutely wear eye protection for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, would it be, are people in a fool's paradise using those face shields? I sometimes see people walking down the street here in Manhattan rocking a face shield, sometimes with a mask, sometimes without a mask. And it's kind of a cool fashion statement. It looks kind of space age. But is that really conferring protection? Because, obviously the face shield, it doesn't completely enclose the face. There's a space underneath it where particles can travel upwards. Or when you're in the office treating patients, do you use some type of goggles or what?
Yes. So I've seen that as well, Dr. Hoffman, being in New York. I've definitely seen people on the street wearing those face shields. I don't know if there's been a study comparing face shields versus masks versus plus or minus goggles.
Right.
So
no,
we don't
isn't.
Know
yeah.
yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm sure that will hopefully be investigated and published in the future. But just again, in general, if you are in a high virus load situation, I would recommend wearing goggles that are very form-fitting. Mm-hmm. So they really do not have any gaps. You do not want any, you know, particular suspended virus particles to get through into your eyes. So mm-hmm. tight-fitting goggles, you know, I know some doctors in the height of the pandemic in New York, they were even wearing ski masks. Mm-hmm. They create a very tight shield, mm-hmm. and they're very wide, so they don't fog up as much. Because that's the other issue is mm-hmm. when we do wear some of this protection, yeah. it can fog up and it can affect our vision. So yeah. That's something else to consider. And even for my patients, you know, when I see them in the office, of course, I wear my PPE, but I do require that they wear masks. In terms mm-hmm. of goggles, that is up to them. But of course, I have to have them remove their goggles during the exam. But even just simply wearing a mask in, you know, as they're being examined, oftentimes everything gets fogged up. So, you know, I'm trying to examine their eyes, but my lenses get fogged up. My equipment gets yeah. fogged up. So it's a little bit tricky.
It's a nuisance. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is kind of an imposition.
It's an interesting yeah. dilemma we have now that we never had before. So all repercussions of COVID.
Yeah. Speaking of repercussions of COVID, I think a lot of people are spending more time on screens. You know, my iPhone gives me a weekly report. You know, your screen time is up, your screen time is down. It was up alarmingly during COVID-19, because I was spending a lot of time sitting around looking at my emails, looking at social media, even using my tablet to read. Is eye strain one of the inadvertent consequences of COVID-19?
Yes, and actually, I would say I'm more concerned about increase in digital screen time than COVID spread through the eyes. I mean, I think this is probably something that, you know, has really come to light, no pun intended, during yeah. the pandemic, and will continue to be, a concern going forward, because so many of us are working from home, even now, even as things open up, many people are still working from home, homeschooling, connecting with family and friends via devices, and watching more TV or streaming. So our screen time has gone up exponentially. And it's very interesting. Before the pandemic, the average amount of screen time estimated in the U.S. was 11 hours a day for adults.
Wow.
And that's mind-boggling.
Yes.
Mind-boggling. Even yeah. for children, I think it was estimated that most kids spend at least 6 hours a day in front of some kind of a screen or device. Wow. So, you know, I'm a little afraid to see what the numbers are going to look like, you know, during and after the pandemic, but it's going to be a lot more. And I know, as you mentioned, you've had an increase in screen time. I have, my daughter has. So this is really a universal issue. And, you know, what happens is when we're on a screen, fortunately, there is no long-term damage to our eyes from being, at least not that we know of, from being on a screen, but there are short-term issues. Mm-hmm. So there is this condition called digital eye strain, which I mentioned before. And it's a constellation of symptoms. It's blurry vision, trouble focusing, dry eye, mm-hmm. light sensitivity, sometimes even headaches, shoulder and neck pain. So we all need to kind of be cognizant of our screen time and do whatever we can to protect against digital eye strain and blue light, which is the light that comes from our screens. And there's a couple of great ways to do that, mm-hmm. To protect our eyes against blue light. You know, many people ask me, oh, Dr. Bannick, should I be getting blue light blocking glasses, or mm-hmm. should I use the screen filter? But what I tell
which,
them
by
is,
the way, which interestingly know, enough, by the way, those glasses aren't blue. They're amber color. They're yellow, you know, counterintuitively, right?
Yes. Some are yellow, orange, or even red. And mm-hmm. what they're doing is they're blocking out the short wavelength blue light energy wavelength. But what I tell patients is, you know, our eyes actually have an innate blue blocking ability, and many people don't realize this, is that we have pigments in the back of our eyes. They have names. They're types of carotenoid pigments. They're called lutein, zeaxanthin, and mesozeaxanthin. And these pigments are put there to absorb harmful blue light and also UV light. So we have innate blue blockers inside our eyes. And the best way to get these pigments is, unfortunately, our bodies can't make the pigments. I wish we could, but we can't generate the pigments ourselves. We have to get it through either our diet or through supplementation. And in terms of diet, there are some great natural, you know, fruits and vegetables that contain lutein and zeaxanthin. For example, green leafy vegetables, orange peppers, corn is a great source, even egg yolk is a great source of lutein and zeaxanthin. But the third pigment I mentioned, which is the mesozeaxanthin, it's a cousin of of lutein and zeaxanthin, it's a chemical cousin, it is not available readily in food. So that one is, we actually think, is the most potent of all the blue blocking pigments. So we have to, you know, I would stress nutrition plus supplementation. And I've done a lot of research in the many eye health supplements out there. You know, there's a whole slew of them, probably over 50 eye health supplements on the market. Each is different in its formulation, but the one I found, or there's an ingredient I found, which is, it automatically provides a lutein zeaxanthin and mesozeaxanthin, which our eyes need, and that is called Lutimax 2020. So that's the ingredient.
It was found in many... Lutimax?
Lutimax, yes. Lutemax. So it's like lutein to the max.
Okay.
And 2020, think of vision, you know, perfect vision is 2020 vision. So Lutimax 2020. And the great thing is this is an ingredient and it's found in many of the supplements on the market. So you just have to look for the label, turn the bottle around, look at the label, look to make sure it says Lutimax 2020 because it will have all three of the pigments that we need and in the same ratio that's naturally available in our diet. And it's the only one that's been clinically proven to help reduce digital eye strain, blue light, you know, protect against blue light, and also help with our sleep. And we can talk about that too. But it's a great, way to, you don't have to think about it. You don't have to think about what foods you're eating. You can automatically get the nutrition that your eyes need.
So it's an ingredient found in certain eye supplements. Any particular brands that you could mention, or you just want to be ecumenical?
Sure, yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, there are many out there. The ones that that I found best are Life Extension, Doctor's Best, Nature's Way. I mean, these are common supplements found on the market. That contain Lutimax 2020. So again, just look at the label. And the great thing is that there are even some eye health supplements. You know, we're talking about kids before and how much time they're spending on devices. Our kids in particular may be more susceptible to blue light just because their eyes may not be able to filter out some of those harmful blue rays. So it's hard to get kids to eat some of those fruits and vegetables I mentioned, but there are gummy forms of the supplements, which are wonderful for kids as well as adults. So me, myself and my family, we have the gummy form and they taste good. You know, and they're easy to take. So lots of options with Lutimax 2020.
And of course, at the other end of the aging spectrum, these ingredients are critical for prevention of macular degeneration, you know, which is, you know, something that is, I guess, possibly the leading cause of blindness in seniors, right?
It is, yeah, in the U.S. and in the world. It is one of the four leading causes of blindness. And nutrition, I mean, there are multiple studies that show that diets low in these pigments, lutein, zeaxanthin, and mesozeaxanthin, increase the risk for macular degeneration. Diets that are rich in these pigments decrease the risk. And so supplementation is also very, very important. You know, just an interesting fact about, you know, our diet. So most people just don't get enough lutein in their diet. So the recommended amount is anywhere from 6 to 20 milligrams of lutein a day. And most adults get about 1 or 2 milligrams the most. Even even people on the best, you know, most healthy Mediterranean diets probably are only getting 1 to 2 milligrams. And for zeaxanthin, you know, the second pigment I mentioned, it's estimated we get at least 1 milligram, 1 to 2 milligrams a day. Most people get less than 1 milligram. So this is, again, where supplementation is wonderful. For eye health, for, you know, our current lifestyles, being on devices, and for prevention of macular degeneration.
Okay, great stuff. Okay, I want to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. When you return, more on the subject of eye health with integrative ophthalmologist Dr. Rudrani Banik. That's Banik. And by the way, for our listening audience, you have a website, and can people learn more about you?
Absolutely. So my website is my full name, which is RudraniBanikMD.com.
Okay. Let's spell it out. RudraniBanik, Banik, Banik, .com. Thank you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.